The True Story of What Was by Jism, read by Darling Sweet. Herring, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty. Fandom, Fairy Tales. It is a tale with many names. You may have heard it once or twice. They speak of Snow White and the dwarf that loved her well. They speak of Snow White and the huntsman who could not bear to kill her. They speak of Snow White and the evil queen, and expect you to nod along. Snow White, that paragon of virtue, that beautiful, beautiful girl, felled by an apple and saved by a man. And, oh, isn't that an old story? Love is kind, isn't it? Well, isn't it? Is it better that our children smile at the end of the story, that their dreams are unmarred with a trail of blood, that it might be more honest, that they grow up around that which is gentle instead of that which is true? They say history repeats itself, and there is certainly no arguing that. Perhaps lore isn't kind. Perhaps, in fact, it is dangerous. Whatever the case, this is the tale of she who came to be called Snow White, and the tale of the woman who loved her. Be not fooled by the trappings history has provided. This is an assassination story. It is said that her mother pricks her finger on a spindle on a winter's afternoon, and seeing the blood upon the snow, casts a wish. Oh, she is said to have murmured, if only I had a child with skin as white as snow, hair as black as ebony, and lips as red as blood. Perhaps it is even true. Many wishes failed to come to fruition, after all. Glatia, for that is her name, she who is carved from nothing. She who ensnares and enchants, every story starts somewhere, is born with hair as black as ebony, lips as red as blood, and skin the color of cut wheat, a warm and honeyed brown. Her mother's wish was not for her daughter's beauty, but for her daughter's lineage. Had she been the child of anyone but the king, she might have been spared the life of royalty, so thick with intrigue and double meanings. The queen has been so tired for so long, has loved her husband, but others too, had clung to the hope that her daughter might be born of another father, and, as such, banished, allowed to grow up something other than a pawn. When it is clear she is a princess through and through, the queen perishes on the table. Her last hope dashed and forgotten. Although, of course, it isn't. Glatia grows to be many things. She is never, ever a pawn. It is said the king marries an evil queen, obsessed with her own vanity, constantly checking her reflection against a magicked mirror. Listen again. Decide how much sense it makes. Magic at her fingertips and a kingdom in her clutches. And you suppose she hates the princess for her beauty? Tsk, tsk. Even fairy tales must at least try for logic. Let us start at the beginning and wind back. Lore calls Galatea Snow White, because that is what her name means. Adriana suffers a similar fate, though, of course, it's one she rather lives up to. It is Galatea's royal pedigree that stirs hate hot in Adriana's chest. Her pedigree and the way she grows into it, commanding attention with the powers of born royalty. Galatea knows this, because she can see it. When her stepmother stands behind her, the reflections double cast in the looking glass. There is nothing but fury on both faces. Adriana is fair-skinned and fair-haired, and neither one of them is particularly beautiful. With the kingdom at stake, there are things more important than looks. Glatia's father dies on a Tuesday afternoon in midsummer. She is 16 years old and smarter than her stepmother. She leads the first huntsman to the woods and leaves him to die. She strips the second of his clothes and weapons and takes care of him herself, leaves the body at the palace gates as a warning. "I will come back for you," she says, for she knows Adriana is watching. The magic mirror is true enough, of course, though it's not beauty that it follows. Glatia was born to power. She'll never be the fairest of them all, but the strongest. Well, that's another matter entirely. I will come back for you, and my kingdom. She considers taking a palace horse, thinks better of it. There are far more exciting ways to travel. It is said that Snow White meets a band of 7 merry dwarves who guard her from harm and keep her from want. This is patently ridiculous on any number of levels, the most obvious which being that Galatea never wants for anything. She did not abandon the palace with naught but the clothes on her back. Even if she had not orchestrated her departure, she would not have been left penniless. She is the sole princess of a vast realm, raised with the fear of kidnapping hot at the back of her throat. She has not left her quarters without some coin on her person since she was old enough to learn the word ransom. There is no band of merry dwarves, though there is briefly a band of surly ones. She rides away from the palace on the back of their cart, having bribed them for the pleasure with a brooch of which her stepmother had been particularly fond, and they are good enough company, for all they are the worse for drink. She abandons them with a wink at the first village they come across, her face purposefully dirtied, her dress artfully torn to rags, her hair plaited into long, unrecognizable braids. Stripped of her finery, she seems no princess, and the villagers are not afraid of her. She gets to know them, because she should. Because it is the right thing to do. Because she will be their queen some day, and royalty has been a game of image for far too long. There is no point in hoping to rule, if she does not hope to rule well. It is said that Snow White speaks to the animals, because of course it is what they say. Which is more frightening, you must ask yourself. A girl who speaks to the forest, or a queen who speaks to her people. Precedent will be precedent, after all. There is danger in the truth. There is accountability to be mined there. The dwarves take her east, so this is where Galatea starts. She learns to walk the grasslands, to hunt the game in the brush. She learns to weave baskets, to sharpen knives. She learns who, and what, holds power, the hows and whys of those who will become her subjects, and trains a mare from birth, names her Clytie, or her mother. She rides west until she hits the water, and starts again. Fishing is an art, and politics another. Carefully, studiously, she learns both. She rides north and makes an acquaintance of the mountains. She rides south and learns all she can of drought. Her 21st birthday dawns achingly hot, and Galatea has traveled her realms. She raises her eyes to the heavens and smiles. Dangerous for the queen. Soon, soon, her day will come. There is just one more thing to do. A story has been told to her in the east, in the west, in the north and south. There is a girl, it is whispered, a princess of long abandoned kingdoms, who has slept for centuries, who waits for true love's kiss to wake her up. Princes have tried and princes have failed. Perhaps it is only a story. Glatia will soon have a kingdom to run, a populace to lead, a queen to murder. She will have time for neither stories nor love when that day comes. She sees no harm now in indulging a curiosity. It is said that Snow White ate a poisoned apple that condemned her to slumber. It is said that Sleeping Beauty pricked her finger on a spindle and met the same exhaustive fate. The bit about the spindle was stolen from Galatea's mother, though there was a poisoned apple eaten, a thick cloud of sleep brought down heavy as a result. That's the trouble, of course, with a tale that has spun around two queens at once. Attribution, tragically, has a tendency to suffer. Two queens at once, you say? But that is not the tale that I was told. From here, dear reader, I'm afraid we must go off book. Galatea rides northeast, for the story was strongest in these regions, told with more fervor, believed with more ferocity. She rides until she is well outside her realms, until Clytie cannot make her way through the brambles, and then she continues on foot. There is a castle, barely visible, looming up from behind a mire of thorns. Galatea circles it once, twice, three times. Then, glad of the technique she was taught in the south, she sets the thicket on fire. For 3 days, the flames rage. Galatea retreats to let it run its course, camps out a half-day's distance away, keeps a careful eye on the smoke. On the 4th day, the sky is clear, and she urges Clytie forward, spurred on by something that is deeper, suddenly, than curiosity. This may be Galatea's only chance at love, and while it is not so important as leadership, not so crucial as winning her rightful throne, that does not mean she does not want it. The palace is in ruins, which is unsurprising. Galatea climbs the winding staircase carefully, aware that they could crumble beneath her feet. The whole place is littered with corpses, the armor of princes that have tried and failed. But the castle seems to like her, lets her pass unscathed. She plucks a set of jeweled daggers from one pile of remains, slides them into her braid for safekeeping, and follows the path she seems to know by heart. The air shimmers around the woman on the bed, whose hands are clasped across her stomach, whose skin is the color of sunrise, whose hair cascades across the pillow, long since gone white with the magic that's preserved her. She looks about Galatea's age, though of course she would do. In reality, she might well be considered ageless. Galatea presses a finger to her mouth and leaves a kiss there, reaches her hand through the shimmering to press it to the woman's lips. It takes less than a second, and then her eyes flutter open. They, too, are the color of sunrise. And Galatea's breath catches in her chest as she pulls her finger away. You are not a prince, the woman says. No, Galatea agrees. A princess, as it happens. Thank the gods, says she who will turn out to be named for the dawn. And Galatea's smile is learned, though it was not something she was taught. As Aurora awakes, the castle does. Human life has long since fled, of course. But the palace has spent centuries steeped in magic, has picked a few things up. Aurora leads Galatea about with their fingers twined together, bays in a pond that waits on the grounds, tells her the true story of how her fate unwound. A poisoned apple, an ambitious witch, a royal pedigree in politics, politics. Galatea recognizes Adriana, of course. But it is far too late for her to be frightened. It would be difficult to be frightened in any case, for it is not just the castle that wakes with Aurora. They walk the woods, and life springs up around her. They grow warm, and the sky opens up with summer rain. Galatea never speaks to the forest, but the forest speaks to Aurora. She has been made ancient against her wishes, tormented by the petty desires of man. The earth is in sympathy with her. They ride southeast, daggers tucked into Galatea's hair, vengeance burning in Aurora's eyes. The queen, Galatea knows, is watching. She hopes that she is terrified. There's an army waiting for them at the gates, but it is an army of Galatea's subjects. She smiles at them, raises her arms, speaks to them in their own languages. They gasp and remember her, drop their swords. She has walked her realms and met her subjects. She would be a queen in any case, born to royalty or not. Adriana tries to flee, and Aurora's force does not allow it. Adriana tries to fight, and Galatea's army holds her still. This was, from the first, an assassination story. Galatea uses two daggers and carves out Adriana's heart, because you can't be too careful with magic. It's been said already, hasn't it, that every story starts somewhere. Galatea uses clean hands to lift the crown from where it's fallen. Place it on the head of her queen. We shall have to make a second of these, she comments, and Aurora smiles at her, white hair billowing in a wind that has arisen from nowhere. The crown that lands on Galatea's head is woven of the grass of the east, the water of the west, the mountains of the north, and the fires of the south. It is the fruit of her realm, and she joins Aurora's hand with hers as they go out to meet their people. They live happily ever after, of course. Fairy tales aren't always wrong. This story has been read to you by Darling Sweet. It can be found at Jism's Tumblr, and I can be found at the Archive of Our Own, under Darling Sweet, if you want to leave me feedback, which would be amazing. I really would appreciate you leaving me feedback. Thank you.